The Hard Shoulder on Newstalk.
With Nissan Subscribe and Drive. No deposit, no compromise, no fuss. Find out more at nissan.ie.
Yes, that's the music Jim wants to go out to. Jim has gotten in touch on 53106. My wife is instructed to play Do You Realise by the Flaming Lips when I hit the road. A beautiful song to go out to. Jim, hard to disagree with that. Daniel in Sligo says, I'm 35 and I've told my partner I want the Night Visiting Song by the Dubliners if something ever happens to me. Kathleen in Cork says, I want Wish Me Luck as You Wave Me Goodbye. My favourite so far. My friend died recently. He was a rogue and a wheelchair user his whole life. He surprised us all by choosing I Will Walk 500 Miles by the Proclaimers. Genius. Genius is right. 53106. Keep those suggestions coming of songs you would like played at your funeral or you have heard played at other funerals. That Neffet briefing, I should say, to the nation from Tony Holohan, Ronan Glynn, Killian DeGasgow, Philip Nolan, all the big hitters, is ongoing as we speak, and we're monitoring it here on the show, and as soon as there's any news from it, we will bring it to you. Joining me in studio right now, though, Stephanie Prisner, the podcast presenter, basically, and News Talk's own Simon Tierney. Have you a song, Stephanie, you'd like played at your funeral?
I'm a fan of the old hymns, but I know a friend of mine has it written down that she wants to go out to Ride the Valkyries.
Oh, that was great. Dun, dun,
dun. Yeah.
Okay.
So isn't that right, Valkyrie?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
So a raging fan of the Third Reich. Anyway, Simon.
I'd go with Hello Darkness, My Old Friend.
Oh, very good.
Which I also sing before I drink a pint of Guinness after a lockdown. Or I'd go with The End by The Doors.
Oh, yeah. That
the sound of silence.
Great tune. The sound of
silence.
So we could talk about this for the rest of the show, but that's not what you're here to talk about. You're here to talk about these CSO stats. It's European Statistics Day, so the CSO have released a snapshot of Ireland and Irish people and Irish society based on the latest statistics that they have compiled. And again, much like funeral songs, we could talk about this until 7 o'clock. So I know you've picked out a few kind of standout issues or standout statistics that you want to focus on. Simon, what's the first one?
Yeah, so I'm interested in the baby names. Kieran, as I've talked about a few times on this show, I have a 17-month-old. Her name is Giovanna, and I was interested. The CSO has a function on their website where you can check any name and see how popular it is.
Where does Giovanna appear?
So if it's really unpopular, it'll say there are 3 or less babies with this name. We came under that bracket. But it's interesting. The most
Were you
popular,
proud of that, though?
I'm very smug about it, to be honest.
Yeah.
Very, very smug about
I'm the opposite end because my daughter's called Grace, which is number one.
No way.
Common.
You are contributing to this list.
Yes.
No, it's a lovely name. But the second most popular girl's name really interests me because I was shocked. I don't know anyone with this name or anyone who has a child with this name. And I hope I'm even pronouncing it correctly. It's Fia.
Yeah. Fia. I know a Fia.
Yeah. F-I-A-D-H. Now, 20 years ago, at the early 2000s, it was a popular girl's name in Ireland, but it was spelled the other way, which is F-I-A. And now we put a D-H on it. It's much more popular.
It's the Irish for deer, isn't it?
I don't know.
Is it?
Well, my grandmother's house used to be called Cockhamonia. So like Tishilginadock, F-H-I-A-D-H. And it was in Castleknock and it was something to do with deer.
But you lost me at Tishilginadock. Anyway, apparently it is deer. A voice in my ear just tells me it is deer. It's the Irish for deer.
Deer, as in reindeer, not D-E-A-R.
Oh, sorry, not expensive.
No. like a horse with antlers.
I get it.
Not an expensive baby.
Yeah, it's interesting. What about the boy? Jack is still number one. Jack is regularly number one and has been for a couple of decades now.
Years. Yeah, Jack and James are very, very popular. I'm more interested in the third and fourth most popular names. I was tweeting about this earlier is Noah and Daniel. Now, there's been a rake of Noahs. Noah's really, I know 2 or 3 babies called Noah. They're both very Old Testament.
But then so is Ruth and Rebecca. They're like very big characters in the Old Testament.
Who was Rebecca?
She was like someone's wife. So Rebecca was something to do with Solomon. I actually don't know the details of, but I know that Ruth and Rebecca are like really Old Testament names.
Yeah.
And no one seems to be like, Old Testament that. But I think because Noah and the Ark and all. But I'm pretty sure it's probably pop culture that's made Noah
I think it's also...
You mean Noah, because of Noah from Home and Away?
Yeah, or like Noah from the OC or some
but
sort of
sonically,
television show.
I think it's a beautiful name as well. I think that's what attracts a lot of
not
people.
Not if you're from
it.
Cork and you say Noah.
Noah.
That's
it's just like you're just constantly saying Noah to your
child. Preisner. Well, Stephanie, BMI stood out for you for all the wrong reasons. Explain this to me.
Oh my God, like this concept of obesity, right? It's only recently that we've kind of medicalized fatness, which is weird when you think about it because we haven't medicalized like tallness or baldness. And I think it's that we first decided...
Yeah, but sorry, being tall or being bald doesn't adversely affect you the same way being
does.
Fat.
No, it doesn't. There are... It's proven that it is not a metric of health. BMI was invented by an astronomer, first of all. It only measures your ratio of height to weight. It's a completely useless measurement. And actually, in the States, right, where they're constantly doing obesity metrics and investigations, 54 million people who were categorized as obese had cardiometabolic measures that showed that they were absolutely healthy, and 21 million people who had a normal BMI were classed as unhealthy. And it's just like fatness is like anything else, it's controlled by genetics. Time and again, we see people, they can lose weight, but they tend to put it back on because it's genetic. It's not because they're not working hard enough or because they're not, you know, because they're lazy.
Yeah, hold on now. There's lots of different representative groups out there who would say you're wrong. I mean, the Irish Heart Foundation and others, they would say that being overweight does adversely impact your health.
It is not a causation. It is not a causation. So if you are overweight and you are getting the same amount of and you're walking 30 minutes a day and you're doing all the things, but you're still overweight, then you are at equal risk to someone who has a normal BMI, even if you're measuring it that way, or is a normal weight. It
but
is not
BMI
a metric of health.
But then, but your chance of being overweight is increased if you're not doing that 30 minutes of walking. So the being overweight is an indicator that the person is possibly not doing that exercise. So then it is a useful metric to identify people who are maybe not doing that exercise.
I know plenty of people, and I think you'll find that a lot of people who are overweight are doing exercise, and they do eat, you know, they do eat their vegetables, that five portions of fruit and veg a day. But it is stigmatizing, discriminatory, and perpetuates disordered eating, which these diets then make people gain weight and gain it back and often gain more. And we need to stop measure. I was really disappointed to see BMI in the CSO statistics.
You don't think we should measure people's weight?
They asked people for their height and their weight and then calculated into a BMI. And I'm talking about BMI as a useless thing. I don't know that people's weight is actually relevant when it comes to health. It is often the thing that a doctor comes in, they see that you're overweight. And I know this from when I used to be overweight, that my health issues were not taken as seriously as they were when I was in a smaller body.
Yeah, I would say that's absolutely true. But I mean, the idea that you could maintain your 30 minutes of exercise, like that is reduced, the possibility of that is reduced if you're overweight because of the pressure you're putting on your joints.
But pressure being, this is another thing, like I could talk about this all day, pressure being put on the joints, there has been studies shown that losing weight, people who are arthritic or who are waiting for hip or knee replacements, when they lose a little bit of weight, there is not an equivalent improvement in their symptoms.
But the damage is probably done.
But it's not like you at your weight running are putting more pressure on your joints than someone who is just carrying extra weight. It's not.
Yeah, but the person who is carrying the extra weight but is doing the same running I'm doing is putting more pressure on their joints.
I mean, not necessarily. It might be true, but we can't say that that is the case in all cases.
Fundamental physics would suggest it's true.
Yeah, but putting pressure on the joints is not leading to the issue.
We've kind of gone down a rabbit hole.
Sorry,
here.
We have. I'm just saying that these conversations that you and I are having, people are listening and they're saying, oh yeah, no, but being overweight is a health risk. And I'm saying that it's not. Studies have actually shown that being in the 25 to 30 BMI category is actually the most healthy, and we need to stop using weight as a measurement of health.
I'll tell you what is a health risk, and there is no disagreement about it, is smoking. Smoking rates as well are captured in this, Simon.
Yeah, really interesting. I mean, depending on what metric you use, it can be confusing what the smoking rates are in the EU. Like in Ireland, for example, we're actually really low compared to the EU average. So the EU average is 21% regular smokers.
What's regular smoking?
So that's smoking every day.
Okay.
In Ireland, 9% of people smoke every day. So really well below. Now, 15.4% of people will smoke one or more cigarettes per week. So, you know what I mean by the metrics are
cheeky fag
tricky.
Up the chimney with a glass of wine.
But yeah, exactly, when the kids are gone to bed. But what I think is interesting is that more women admitted, I suppose, that they increased their smoking habit during the COVID lockdowns than men. So there is, you know, we've spoken a lot in the media about the increase in, you know, drinking at home, opening a bottle of wine during the lockdowns, etc. But we haven't talked so much about an increase in smoking. And even though smoking rates are generally going down every year, perhaps there was a spike during COVID.
I wonder, Stephanie, do you think that's a little bit because of, we've talked about this and there have been other conversations about the pressure that women were under as opposed to men. Women have to do an awful lot of the burden carrying at home compared to men, by all accounts, during COVID. And obviously, look, there's exceptions to that. But as a, as an overall rule, that was it. And I wonder, is that increased rate in smoking a reflection of that? A little bit of the, kind of a stress reliever?
Yeah, I mean, I certainly know for myself when I used to smoke, it's the one thing that I say all the time. If I found out I was dying in the morning, I would be down to buy a carton of cigarettes. I think it helps to, you know, you're inhaling for four, you're holding your breath, you're exhaling for four. It regulates your breathing. Obviously, this is aside from all of the toxic chemicals and how terrible it is for you. But I do think that people use it as a stress reliever. And it is something where you get a little bit of time for yourself standing in the corner. You know, if you are pressured by children or bosses, you're allowed to kind of step out. And I do think that all of those factors help stress relief.
But also, I think like there's an unspoken group, which is the social smoking community. And, you know, because of the lockdown, social smoking wasn't so much of a thing. Do you know what I mean? So did those social smokers just stop smoking?
I guess they stopped.
Because it's not social anymore.
They stopped until the nightclubs reopen in 48 hours' time. And then they can go out and have a cigarette
again. An excuse to take
off
their mask.
Yeah, exactly. Just on alcohol, before we wrap things up, Stephanie, I mean, there was alcohol figures and alcohol consumption figures as well included.
Yeah, and very interestingly, what I found, so this was broken up into a couple of categories. One was very affluent, disadvantaged, very disadvantaged. And 83% of very affluent people reported drinking alcohol, and only 70% of very disadvantaged people reported drinking alcohol, which I think is really interesting.
Kind of counterintuitive.
Yeah. It's, well, not
maybe not counterintuitive,
but like
it's counter-narrative.
Contrary to the narrative that we're always fed, which is that, you know, people in very disadvantaged areas rely on alcohol and are heavy drinkers. Yeah. And that's just simply not the case. The data shows it.
We have only scratched the surface, but it's all we've time for. I mean, I wasn't lying when I said we could keep talking about this until about 7 o'clock this evening.
We did fall down a BMI rabbit hole as
we
well.
We did
though.
Go down a bit of a BMI rabbit hole. We both fit it down the rabbit hole. That's the main thing. A 70
Prizer
podcast presenter, News Talk's own Simon Tierney. Thank you both very much for joining me here on The Hard Show.